This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth and a little development here in Central Virginia, a little local politics. We always look forward to this discussion. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Coy.
Are you? You are doing good. I can look at you and tell. You must have had a good lunch. Where'd you go for lunch?
Where did I go for lunch? I went to the...
Did you have one of those fine drive-thrus?
Peking restaurant on 5th Street. It's on the road that crosses the mall, one of the mall crossings.
Okay. That's 2nd and 4th, right?
Yeah, so it must be 4th Street.
Oh, so it's a little place downtown.
Yeah.
What'd you get?
Chinese.
Vegetable fried rice?
I got all sorts of things.
What's this? Michael Bisseglia live in studio?
I go to their lunch buffet often for the team.
Yeah, that's what I do.
And I overstuff the container, and it's like all spewing out.
Right, right. I do the same thing.
Yeah.
And it's great. It's like $6 or
best
something.
Deal you can
$6.98.
Find.
Really?
Incredible. Yeah, do it.
That's a good deal. $6 for a buffet.
Did the food bring you in here? Or do you have a traffic update for us?
No, food.
Excellent.
My ears heard food, and I zipped right in.
So you really go there a lot?
I mean... once in a while, yeah. Once a month.
And what's it called again? Peking?
Yeah.
Peking. And it's downtown? It's good?
Yeah, it's good. It's a good deal, too. You just stuff it in there. And then I get so hungry in the car, I open it up and start eating.
Of course you do. Of course you do. You're a good American.
Yeah, I can't help myself.
Yeah, you start eating that buffet on the way home.
I do.
Good deal.
So the staff at
Michael Bisseglia, everybody. There you go.
So now the staff thinks that this is a food show and that every week, you know, we talk about pie.
We do talk about food.
Chinese food today.
Yeah, well.
I think Michael thought we had some food sitting in here.
So you went to Peking, you had good Chinese. What's your favorite Chinese? What do you eat?
Oh.
I get the tofu with vegetables.
No, I get chicken dishes.
You get the chicken.
The spicy chicken dishes.
Ooh, you like the spicy chicken?
Yes.
With the three little things on there, the three little hot peppers?
Yeah, but I don't eat those.
Extra spicy.
I don't eat those.
You don't eat the peppers.
Maybe that's why I'm in a good mood.
Now, you also had some news that you just shared with me right before we went on the air that you are on Facebook now.
That's why I'm so excited. I knew there was something.
Of course you're excited. Brian Wheeler is on Facebook.
Now, I have to correct you already.
You and everybody else.
Charlottesville Tomorrow is on Facebook.
Oh.
Brian
Wheeler's not on Facebook.
No.
But Charlottesville Tomorrow is on.
We are.
That's a good thing.
Thank you to Sean Tubbs on our staff.
Well,
the other half of Charlottesville Tomorrow, Sean, who is on Facebook.
Oh, yes, he is indeed.
He's
a Facebook friend.
Create a page for Charlottesville Tomorrow.
Of course.
So we've entered the Facebook realm.
Well, I'll have to friend Charlottesville
please
Tomorrow
do.
On Facebook.
And if you're listening, please friend us. We need friends.
Now, it's only a matter of time before you got your own Facebook page.
I'm trying to avoid that.
Well, I will tell you, the first couple of weeks, it's like... you're sort of obsessed with it because all of a sudden you're reconnecting with these people that you haven't talked to. In my case, one woman, I haven't talked to her for over 35 years. And it was like, oh, hi, how are you? She's a realtor down in Florida. It's like, hey, what's going on? You're just discovering all these people. Yep. Now I like sort of, I seldom spend much time on it at all.
I'm, you know, if you Google, you know, I'm sure you Google yourself, Coy.
I get on the Google every now and then.
You have a pretty unusual name.
I do indeed.
So you're probably at the top of the returns, right?
Yes.
I assume so. So when I do that, I've been bumped down to number two or three in the Brian Wheeler realm. But so anyway, people can find me. So if they want to find me, they'll find me.
You need a Facebook. You got all sorts of friends out there that want to find you and track you down.
You know, I'm a little worried about that.
Who's the oldest friend that you haven't talked to, like way back? Like for me, it was Michelle Laux. Hadn't seen her since I was like 5 years old. We cried as I moved away. Goodbye, Michelle. I looked out the back window and I found her on Facebook 35 years later.
Some of my elementary school buddies, I'd like to
find out what they're up to.
Yeah.
You know what? They're bald and fat. Chances are, that's what I have discovered.
But our goal here is to find a new way to communicate our stories and all the work we're doing. So Sean is posting.
And y'all are good at that.
Sean's posting the stories we write in our news center, also on Facebook. So we hope that'll reach a new audience and people will find out what we're doing.
Brian, did you see, we're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at cvilletomorrow.org. Check out the news center there. Speaking of the news center, did you hear the remarks recently? Former Governor Gerald Baliles, now head of the Miller Center, the recently awarded the award Virginian of the Year by the Virginia Press Association.
I saw that he got that.
His remarks at the Virginia Press Association last weekend down in Norfolk, He said, look, I'm really concerned of the decimation of newspapers in Virginia and what that means for political journalism. Citizens don't know what's going on, and that's dangerous.
Wow.
And he's going to convene a special conference or something at the Miller Center to explore this issue. You should be a part of that with, because you have figured out the sort of the nonprofit model approach to local news, because y'all do as good a job, if not better in many respects, covering local growth and development, you know, better than any big newspaper out there.
Thank you. Well, I look forward to hearing about that.
And I just think what you, the model that you have established and that is Charlottesville Tomorrow is something that I think folks like Media General could take a lesson or two from.
And we're definitely trying to engage the community, get them involved, let them know when they can participate, what's happening at these meetings if they miss one, know that the full audio is there waiting for them, timeline. So that's the kind of value we try to bring to the conversation.
There you go.
Thank you for that feedback.
So before we take a quick break, give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in this hour, all the very latest about growth and development issues.
Some old news, old business. We're going to be talking about the Meadow Creek Parkway, Meadow Creek Sewer Interceptor. We've talked about those things in the past. We have some new information.
Poop tubes.
We have a roundabout being proposed for Route 250.
What's it called?
I'm not going to tell you. Save it for later. No, it's a different one.
A different one. What's that road in Ivy, that one where you turn to go up to the school?
Owensville,
yeah.
So there's a second roundabout being proposed for 250.
We'll talk about the roundabout.
Talk about the city Democrats, how they're going to nominate their candidates.
Yeah, that's coming up. That's soon.
Impact is holding their big assembly on March 30th, Monday. Okay. So that's going
to
happen.
Okay. A lot of people go to that. Things.
Yeah.
There you go. We got all that and more right when we get back. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at civiltomorrow.org. We always look forward to his visits on Tuesday afternoons, talk a little growth, development, local politics. Where should we begin?
Let's start with the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Of course.
I'm sure everyone has heard this news, but just to bring people up
to speed. I was right,
by
the way. I called that. I totally called that.
What did you
call it? Because you asked me. You asked me live on the radio.
What did I say?
You said, what do you think are going to happen? Because I said, well, what do you think are going to happen? You said, no, I'm not going to predict it.
In the court?
Because I just cover it. Uh-huh. Yeah, in that court case.
Uh-huh.
I said, they are going to say, he's going to say no case. He's going to throw it out. And they're going to keep building that road.
Sort of. We'll give you half credit for that.
Yay,
answer.
Half credit. I'll take it.
Needs improvement, Quay. He did deny the injunction. So he said, I'm not going to put a stop to it.
Yeah.
But he did say...
Road building continues as we speak, right?
Right.
Yeah.
In the county, on the county's portion.
Right. Down to Melbourne.
And so this injunction was related to the city's land that happens to be on the other side of Melbourne Road in the county. And the judge, the group, the citizen group, the Coalition to Preserve McIntyre Park, said that, you know, cease and desist, it was what they wanted, because they said the land was illegally transferred to VDOT. Because they didn't have enough votes from city council to have it be a supermajority vote. They needed four votes. They only had three to two.
And the judge said, no, this was a legal transfer.
No, the judge said he hasn't decided that yet.
Oh, he just didn't grant the injunction.
Uh-huh. So the question from Craig Brown, the city's attorney, was, does this group even have standing to put this lawsuit in play? And Judge Sweat at the end said, I'll grant you do have standing, but keep in mind, this could easily be overruled by a higher court because it sounded pretty tenuous. It's not like the group had, you know, a membership and things that they regularly did. They came together.
To file this case.
To file this lawsuit.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, it's a group of people.
Which doesn't mean it's not a valid lawsuit.
It's a group of people that's been working for a long time to stop this. So it's not like they weren't, you know, talking about this before.
Yeah. And if for folks who just moved here, the efforts to stop the Meadow Creek Parkway go back to the 60s. I mean, as early as this road was talked about, people have been fighting it. And, you know, I'm thinking of, I think in 77, 78, there was over 1,000 people in Charlottesville that signed a petition saying, no, don't build this road.
Yep. So on the question of the supermajority, the judge said, sounds interesting. You know, we'll talk about that later. So in May, they will have another hearing on that matter. So May 19th. Uh-huh.
And meanwhile, the road continues.
It continues because the judge said, well, are there any trees left to protect? And the answer was, well, no. And
we got those quick.
and then he said, well, you know, VDOT, what's it going to do to you if we stop? And VDOT said it'll cost us $20,000 a day if we idle Faulkner Construction, who's currently working on the parkway. And so the judge said, well, there's nothing to be gained, really, from stopping. So I'm not going to stop it, but we'll come back to this in May and investigate the legalities of the supermajority and the transfer.
Yeah.
And
so right now, the county is building a road from up near K-Tech down to Melbourne.
Two-lane road. The Meadow Creek Parkway is two lanes, and it's restricted for trucks, as is the current.
Restricted, you know, to trucks.
It can, no.
Or restricted.
No trucks.
How do you word that? Restricted against trucks?
Sure.
Restricted for trucks?
No through trucks.
Just no trucks.
No trucks. Which the current, I saw a sign the other day as I was driving on it that I had not noticed before, but Park Street to Rio, when it gets curvy, that it says no trucks.
You're kidding.
Yeah.
But they widened it for trucks, or for, you know, fire trucks.
Well,
remember
says,
that?
Says no trucks. I do remember the widening.
I like the old Rio Road with all twisty and curvy. Yeah. It was a great traffic calming measure. You had to slow down to go around that.
Well, you still have to
hill.
Slow down because you got people making left turns across traffic, and that, you know,
yeah,
that's a problem.
That's a tough turn there.
But anyway, so it was a 3-hour hearing. This is going to be back in the courts in May, and this is just one of the lawsuits. So another potential lawsuit has not been filed yet, but they've hired another attorney out of Washington to address that whole segmentation issue, the fact that it's looked at as three projects by the Federal Highway Administration, the interchange, the city's portion of the road, and the county's portion. So that may be yet another lawsuit. So this is going to keep on keeping on. Keep on giving us stories.
It's the story that keeps loving you.
Oh, and another activity that happened on this front, Charlottesville City Council voted 3-2 to allocate some funding towards this project, specifically towards the interchange. You know, a minor thing, this stuff comes up. It was a housekeeping item. But when anything Meadow Creek Parkway comes in front of city council right now, it's a lightning rod issue. You can ask Mayor Norris about it when he's on your show later this week. But Mayor Norris said, hey, you got $8 million there heading towards the Meadow Creek Parkway. I'd love to see that go somewhere else. So the vote was 3-2.
To do what again? 3-2 to?
Just to allocate some money that was in an account from VDOT, supposed to be transferred over to this project. So it was a housekeeping item to move the money over. But
still needed their approval to do it.
Still needed their approval. And that's true of most everything. You know, you budget for things, but then there has to be an appropriation by the appropriating body. So
to
city
spend
council
the money, yeah.
Or the Board of Supervisors has to move that money over. So oftentimes, even if you get a donation, you have to appropriate it. So whether the money's coming in or out, there's always another vote. So there will be lots of votes in the future on this project. It's certainly going to be a big election issue.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. And of course, Julian Taliaferro is running for re-election, right?
He is. He's getting a lot of pressure to revisit his past support of the Meadow Creek Parkway. And now he's basically telling the media he's open to all other views on this project. He's going to the rally where they were opposed to it. And he said, you know, he's leaning more against it now.
That's good timing.
It's a contested race. We'll talk about how the city Democrats are going to pick their candidates.
He's never once voted against it, though, has he?
No, he hasn't. He has been in favor of the parkway before he was elected. When he's had chances to vote on granting the easements, he's voted in favor of them.
I shouldn't laugh because maybe the man truly has had a change of heart. You never know.
Sure.
You never know. We're talking with Brian Wheeler online at SeavilleTomorrow.org and now also on Facebook as well. You can friend Charlottesville Tomorrow. Be a friend to Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're going to take a break here at the bottom of the hour for local news and weather. When we get back, we'll talk about the Meadow Creek Sewer Interceptor.
Correct. Doesn't that sound exciting?
The poop tubes. And we'll also talk about the county could be looking at double-digit rate increases for water. Hello. We knew that was coming, though. All that and more when we get back. This is Charlottesville Right Now. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow online at SeavilleTomorrow.org, and he joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk a little growth and development. But before we do, we were listening to that commercial about blood, about giving blood, Virginia Blood Services, and we love Virginia Blood Services, don't get me wrong. I'm just not a big blood donor ever since I did it in high school, like 30 years
did
ago.
Did you faint?
I didn't faint, but
you felt like you were going to?
I felt like crap. I really did. And it sort of stuck with me. I don't fly for the same reason. I don't get in planes. I don't give blood. I just sort of have bad memories of it. And I think, gosh, why would somebody do that? But you, on the other hand, you're one of those blood people.
Yeah, I don't mind.
You like do it a lot?
I should do it a lot. I should do it once a month.
It's supposed to be good for you.
That's the most you can do it.
Really?
Well, I don't know if I buy that it's good for you, but
it's not.
Some people, I've heard that.
I've heard that, or is that like a marketing thing?
I don't know, but I should go once a month because I don't mind doing it.
You don't?
I do it when
you get
it's
the cookie
easy.
And everything.
Oh yeah,
wow.
But you know, it's funny. I have fun with the nurses because I tell them nobody has ever missed, you know, getting my vein. So I put a little pressure on them.
Oh, yeah.
Right before they do it.
You psych them out.
Yeah, of course, usually they're old hands and they're like, yeah, just give me your arm. But
Have you done it like in one of those trucks?
Oh, yeah. That's
like in a parking lot somewhere?
When I worked at SNL Financial, they would always have the blood mobile come, you know, park outside.
Yeah.
And all the employees would sign up. So that was when I did it the most.
Wow.
When it was easy like that.
I'm impressed.
Walk out and do it.
I'm impressed. It takes like big bags and you save a life.
And WINA gets involved in that, you know, the blood drive for the different news organizations.
I'm going to a blood drive, actually a remote broadcast on Monday at the Holiday Inn on Emmett Street.
If you're doing it Tuesday, I'd give blood.
Yeah, well, you come out Monday.
I should come out anyway.
Indeed. Come out there Monday and we'll talk to you while you're giving blood.
Okay, good. I'll do it.
Yeah.
I think.
That sounds good.
I've checked my schedule.
Tell us about this money going up for water.
Speaking of giving blood.
Because there's people out there who have water bills. They got big bills, and all of a sudden those water bills are about to get bigger.
Yep, that's the story pretty much. If the average, this is for Albemarle County. The Albemarle County Service Authority just announced the rates. They are going to advertise for public hearing. These rates will be approved in June, whatever the final rates are. But these are the rates for next fiscal year. The average residential customer in Albemarle County currently pays about $61 a month for water and sewer.
Sounds about right.
Water and sewer.
Together.
Next year.
If you're on a well or septic, forget it. That doesn't apply to you.
Then you're not a ratepayer.
Yeah.
This is for people on public water and sewer. And next year, as proposed, you would pay about $70. So that's about a 13.7% increase. As you said, double digits.
Yeah.
In the average bill. Now, back in...
And is this like a stamp? I mean, is it going to go up again next year and then again the year after that? And
It's been going up. I went back, I did 4 years worth of data. And back in fiscal year 2007, the average bill was about $42. So it was 42 then. It's going up to almost 70 next year. So it has been going up.
It's almost doubled in 4 years.
Percentage-wise, it's not as high as it's been in the past, but it has been going up. The reason it's going up, though, is infrastructure. Capital projects in the budget for the county's Water and Sewer Authority is going to grow from $6.9 million to $12.6 million, an 82% increase in their capital budget.
Yeah.
So what are they building? The things we've talked about on the show.
To support growth.
Well, and to fix old...
And to fix old pipes and stuff,
old pipes. Yeah. And they've got to comply with new measures being required by the Chesapeake Bay Act, getting nutrients out of the septic. So that's an RWSA project, but this stuff's all related.
Yeah.
These are all
big capital
projects.
But most of it is going to support like a new reservoir, a new interceptor.
Not at this point.
It's not?
I mean, it's right, because those projects are not really plugged into the capital budget yet.
Oh, so when those projects get plugged in, then the rates really go up.
Keep in mind, the capital budget, they're looking out, I think ACSA is looking out about 5 years. They may have a long-term plan for 10 years. But keep in mind, the community water supply plan is a 50-year plan.
Yeah.
So those expenses will be are projected right now to be extended over a longer period of time than even the local government's budget in their capital budgets.
We could see water and sewer bills well over $100 inside of 5 to 7 years.
I'm not going to make any forward-looking statements.
But if they've doubled in the last 4 years, from about 40 to almost 80.
You know, there are a lot of factors involved, Coy, and really, I'm not ready to go there yet, but will they keep going up? Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
But, you know, as these projects get done, these are, you know, basically one-time capital projects. So then they'll have some more capacity to take on new debt for other things. So it's something that's constantly changing. And that frustrates some people that you can't be pinned down right now to know what the rates are going to be 10 years from now. Well, we don't know what the tax rate's going to be 10 years from now either.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there's some things that are just not knowable. But what is knowable is that we need these projects. One of them is the North Fork Pump Station. It's a sewer project related to the North Point development and also the National Ground Intelligence Center
yeah.
that's expanding at the Ravana Station.
One way to look at this, and I in when I get cynical, I do, is that this is the sort of the back end tax increase to the folks who say, sure, yeah, new neighborhoods. Yes, yes, yes. The folks on the County Board of Supervisors, they know who they are, who never saw a new neighborhood they didn't like and a project that they couldn't approve. And they said, you know, we're not going to worry about if there's plumbing to support it or water to support it. That's somebody else's problem. We're just going to look at, is it good to green light this neighborhood? And then down the road, your water rates go up to support the infrastructure to support that new neighborhood.
Right. Well, it's just like, you know, and schools and roads happen the same way. They get built after the people have moved in to catch up with that past growth.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, you're right to some degree, but at the same time, we're doing things differently now in Albemarle County than we did in the past. You're right. Some of these projects, like the Meadow Creek Interceptor, that's a sewer line that needs to be upgraded. It's being upgraded to support Albemarle Place, a new development in the county.
Which got approved before they knew they had the pipes to support it.
But what was unusual, or not unusual, but unfortunate about that approval was they didn't put into place an agreement that said the developer would pay for their share of the upgrade. New projects like Hollymead Town Center, at least parts of Hollymead Town Center, Biscuit Run, south of town, those projects have agreements in place that ask the developer to pay for their fair share of whatever upgrades are required. So we are dealing with some old projects.
Lessons learned, you think?
Lessons learned.
Yeah.
The Meadow Creek Interceptor, though, is not just being updated, increased in capacity for county growth. That was a statement made clear at a recent community meeting. Neighborhoods in the city ask the people involved in the Meadow Creek Interceptor to come together and help explain that to them. And we've got a map of that up on the website. But these are, in particular, the Greenbrier neighborhood has been very involved in this because basically the sewer lines are going to be replaced in their backyards. And it was put in the 1950s. And then the right-of-way where that sewer line was put in place was not maintained. So after 50 years, guess what's happened?
They built over that right-of-way.
No, but trees grew there.
Into the pipes?
Well, into the pipes, yep. It's crunching the pipe in places, restricting the flow.
And these are trees in people's yards?
That they're rather attached to.
Oh, of course.
And they don't want them to go away. So the
what a mess.
And then it gets worse. The easements that were negotiated back in the 1950s didn't allow for the pipe to ever be expanded.
Oh,
They just said you could fix it if it broke, but it didn't allow for a new pipe to be put in. So the RWSA has had to contact all these property owners and renegotiate an easement.
And say, we got to tear down your trees, we got to get into your yard, we got to dig up the old sewer pipes and put in even bigger ones.
Yep.
Oh, so, man.
Now, I said it's not just Albemarle Place, it's not just county growth, but it's also because of water inflow into the system. One of the things that happens in big storms is rainwater finds its way into the sewer pipes, and that's something else we have to build capacity for.
Yeah, that's the big problem they have down in Lynchburg.
Yeah. Well, Lynchburg's problem is that septic ends up in the James River.
Yeah. We're talking with Brian Wheeler. Betty's on line one. Betty, welcome to the program. Go right ahead.
Hey, Brian and Coy. Okay, Citizens for a Sustainable Water Plan are claiming that the RWSA are actually hiding the amount of money in the next 5 years that your bills are going to go up. Because actually, if you look at the projections they put out, their five-year capital improvement budget has in it old Gannett Fleming estimates for the dam in the neighborhood of $42 million. Well, if we're going to use the old estimates, it's kind of like using the banking numbers and saying, you know, let's just use those now and we know they're totally bogus. Because Gannett Fleming's come back and they said, well, actually, the dam looks like it's going to cost $85 million or more. So what we're saying is you better use the new numbers and you better use the new projections. And so we also see that they've been doubling our water rates since 2002 to create a slush fund. And the reason they can hide the true increase in our rates is because they've got $30 million we've estimated now in the bank in reserve. So they're going to spend that $30 million, but once they spend it, that's gone. So I estimate, Coy, you're right. Our rates are going to go way over $100, and I'd like all of us to kind of bet on this and see who's in the ballpark, because they're going to triple the debt. They've got $45 million in debt. They're going to go and take the debt up to $200 million. So, I mean, it's a disaster, and I hope the citizens see the disaster that's coming and just stop it. I mean, we have a chance to stop it. We're not like the banking collapse, but we're headed there if people don't just say enough.
Yeah. Well, this community is full of very educated, plugged-in people. You would think something would be able, or you would think an honest conversation could be had about what's really happening.
Well, and that's what you see is happening. The city council has seen the light of day, thank goodness. The Board of Supervisors has not. And the city council said, we're not going forward with this. We have no idea what this is going to cost. This is insane until we know what the costs are going to be. So I think they put everything on hold till they get better estimates.
There you go. Betty, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. Brian, when is the next, like, big meeting that it deals with this, any kind of this thing, this water thing?
The next thing we're eagerly anticipating is the report from the expert panel looking at the Ragged Mountain Dam. One of the reasons I assume that there's not a different number in the capital budget is they don't have a different number at this point. They have competing different projections from two different consulting companies.
They don't have a firm number yet.
They don't have a firm number. So they brought in a panel of experts to look at that project and other parts of this plan and give them some new numbers. So once they have that, they will have to take that into account. So we're waiting to hear, hopefully by the end of this month, we'll get an update. If not this month, next month.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at SeavilleTomorrow.org.
So a quick update on the Ravana master plan, the village of Ravana.
The new roundabout.
That's the Glenmore area. That's where the roundabout is being proposed.
Interesting.
The entrance to the Glenmore,
the other side of
neighborhood.
Town. Yeah.
And Route 250 West. East, I mean.
Who wants to put a roundabout there?
Well, the planners.
Really?
The planners working on the master plan. And so you mentioned Sally Thomas on the Board of Supervisors, who represents the Ivy area. She has long talked about having a roundabout in
Ivy right there at Owensville.
250 West at Owensville and Morgantown Road.
They got to do something there. That's a hard turn there. If you're coming down Owensville and you want to take a left, good luck. I mean, if you're there at the wrong time of day, it backs up.
Well, I think, you know, Glenmore was expecting to have a traffic light put at the entrance to their neighborhood. And that was something the developer proffered or volunteered to put in as part of one of the rezonings. And this roundabout proposal would replace that. Now, again, there's no imminent plan to put this in. So I don't want people to think it's going to happen immediately.
Yeah.
But it's now a drawing on a piece of paper, and you can take a look at that at our website in the news center. And the other thing interesting about the Ravana Master Plan, this is a 20-year plan for that village of Ravana, which includes Glenmore. Again, most of that development, most of that area is the Glenmore development. What they're planning is the rest of it that has not been built out. And it, like Crozet, are those two islands of growth that the county has designated are acceptable for new development. And one of the other interesting things, sewers came up at Glenmore. And there's some question as to whether the ultimate build-out numbers at the village of Ravana would be supported by the sewer capacity that's already there. The answer that came back after they studied it further is it would not. So
we need more sewers in Glenmore too.
If this vision, this master plan was fully realized, they would need more sewer capacity in the Glenmore area. And that had Commissioner Tom Loach, who comes from the Crozet area, who's frustrated with infrastructure and not getting things built.
He's been through this for decades over there.
He said, quote, it's not a quote, we summarized it, why would we want to encourage development there if there are no funds to carry out the infrastructure?
Yeah.
He said, quote, if we're going to make the quality of life decrease for the current residents, why do it? Yeah. So that's the conversation happening right now at the Planning Commission level. And this will ultimately come back for a public hearing in the future.
Right.
We'll keep you posted on that. It'll then go to the Board of Supervisors. So that's the master plan for that area running into transportation and sewer issues.
Yeah, and it's a comment that really resonates with me. Why are we encouraging growth in a place where we don't have infrastructure to support it, and where if you do approve it and say, okay, developers, go ahead, they're not going to give you the money that you need for the infrastructure. They might contribute to it, but they're not going to give you everything you need. So you're going to have to end up asking the rest of us to pay for it.
Well, and you raise a good point there, because one of the big rezonings that took place there, Ravana Village, I don't believe had a sewer clause in that rezoning. I don't believe they proffered to contribute to sewer upgrades. At the time, it wasn't viewed as necessary, but now that they're master planning the community and really counting the number of dots on the map,
yeah,
they're seeing, oh, we may not have enough capacity.
They seem to always do that after the fact.
That's a lesson I don't think the community has learned, because yeah, some of these big rezonings, some people in the community were saying, let's wait until we master plan. Let's wait on the North Point project until we master plan 29 North and figure out what we really need.
Yeah.
And
they don't.
And they've moved ahead feeling like, well, we've held these people up long enough. The plan's gotten better and better and better.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good things on the table. How can we say no at this point?
Like Pantops. They did all that build out and approved all that stuff. And then they started talking about, let's plan Pantops. You did when you approved all that development. You done did it already. What does VDOT feel about this roundabout? Because I know VDOT didn't like that proposal that Sally Thomas had to put a roundabout on 250.
No, they were okay with that.
Because they said the 250 is a secondary highway. We're not going to put a roundabout on a secondary highway.
I don't believe that's what they said. I think they said it would work. They could fit it in there. They just don't have any money for it.
Oh, okay.
So they would, left to their own devices, they would leave the road in Ivy alone because it doesn't warrant having a traffic light or something else put in. And same thing on 250 East. VDOT, doesn't want to spend any money right now. So they don't want to put in traffic light or a roundabout.
Right.
They just want to leave it alone. So I think they'd be okay with a roundabout. The good thing about roundabouts from VDOT's perspective is there are fewer accidents at a roundabout than you have at a traffic light.
Good point. What's the difference between a traffic circle and a roundabout?
Usually scale is the way I think about it. So a roundabout typically has, no more than two lanes of traffic within the roundabout, and the circle tends to be a much bigger item. So I think of traffic circles as what you would see in Washington, D.C., where you might have three or four lanes
of
traffic.
So the traffic circle is bigger than a roundabout.
That's the way I think
of it. Just in broad strokes here.
Roundabouts in this area are the ones you see like out at the airport. There's some in Hollymead Town Center.
Gordonsville.
Gordonsville roundabout. Yeah. Those kinds, that kind of scale.
I like those. They work. They're natural traffic calming, and like you say, there's not as many accidents there as there would be at an intersection.
Yep.
I think we should be doing more of them. Remember years ago when they talked about doing a big one? Who'd you want to do a big one down here at McIntyre and Preston?
Yeah.
I always like that idea.
That could work there, too.
I think that'd be a great place for a big, big roundabout.
So speaking of the city and Hooja, who's a current city councilor, he is not on the ballot this fall, but two current city councilors are Dave Norris and Julian Talaferro, and they have some competition for the nomination.
Uh-huh.
Kristen Zekas has announced she is interested in the Democratic nomination as well. And the Charlottesville Democrats announced last week that they have determined how they are going to pick their candidates.
Okay.
Instead of assembling in a big caucus in an auditorium where they lock the doors and put everyone in there and you can't leave until you figure it out,
yep,
they're having what's called an unassembled caucus. Some people call it a firehouse primary.
Yeah.
And they're going to have one place. Ironically, it's a county middle school. Happens to be located in the city. But at Burley Middle School, they will be having a 10-hour voting window.
That's right up the hill, right?
Right up the hill from you, yes.
Yeah.
They will be having a 10-hour voting period on May 9th to nominate candidates not only for city council, but also for sheriff, treasurer, commissioner of revenue, and commonwealth attorney. So that's what the Democrats are going to do.
That's May 9th.
May 9th. The city Republicans have not announced a process they're going to follow. And if you're independent thinking about running, you've got until June 9th to get your paperwork in.
There you go. Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow, online at cvilletomorrow.org, joins us every Tuesday afternoon. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you, Coy.
Y'all have a great night. Talk to you tomorrow at 4.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.